From WBHM News, I'm Andrew Yeager. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. is often put on a pedestal, but looking at him through that lens strips him of his humanity. So says writer Jonathan Eig, who has written a new biography of the civil rights leader that presents a textured and intimate portrait of King as a person. He follows King from his childhood in Georgia to his first church in Montgomery to arguably his greatest triumph in Birmingham in 1963. I spoke with Eig about his book, which is out today. Tell me more about that humanity. What are the flaws that you think often get sort of pushed aside?
In turning him into a national holiday and a national monument, which are things that he clearly deserved, we've also turned him into this sort of two-dimensional figure. And we forget that he chewed his fingernails. He smoked cigarettes. He tried to hide it from his kids. And on the larger scale, you know, he was afraid of conflict in many ways. It's just a funny thing to say for a protest leader. He also had deeper flaws as a human being, things like marital fidelity. And he recognized his own flaws, and he didn't want to be treated as a saint.
Well, I want to move to Birmingham in 1963. And you note that when King was invited to the city by the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth, initially at least, this mass movement was not mass, and it was not a movement. Why was that?
When King had this great success in Montgomery and really thrilled the nation with the possibility of a nationwide movement that would repeat the magic of Montgomery, he had a hard time duplicating it. King did not have a grand national strategy. This was not, you know, a big rollout with consulting companies, you know, helping to prepare the model. And he went to places like, you know, St. Augustine and really did not fare very well. He found that it was hard to get traction. It was hard to get cooperation. And it was hard to really focus the nation's attention on the issue. Because in Montgomery, it was crystal clear. We're trying to integrate the buses. And you have this dramatic scene of thousands of people walking every day to their jobs. And it was very easy to see what they were asking for. But when he went to places like St. Augustine and Albany, Georgia, it wasn't clear what he was asking for. And the protests kind of fell apart. And when he came to Birmingham, they were determined not to repeat that same failure. They were determined to be more specific. And they focused more on economic demands. Always the goal with King was to create conflict, but they still didn't know how they were going to do it exactly. And it didn't go that well, actually, in the beginning when King arrived in Birmingham.
We know the Birmingham movement led to the Children's March, which had great impact on the civil rights movement. But how did we get to what it became?
You know, when King arrived in Birmingham, a lot of the Black preachers were not on board. They were reluctant to get involved. He found it hard to coalesce support. Of course, now Bull Connor has this reputation as being this brutal law enforcement leader who sicked the dogs, but he was actually showing restraint for a little while, and that was making it difficult. It wasn't until the dogs got loose that people began to think that they were commanding enough national attention that they might actually have a movement on their hands. And it wasn't until King desperately really agreed to allow the students to become the heart, and that was because they couldn't find enough people to march. So that tells you something about how much he was struggling to gain traction in the city.
Well, nevertheless, the march did come through. A year later, he gets a Nobel Peace Prize. You write that roughly this time period is when he's at the height of his influence. What was it about that time period that made him so influential compared to other parts of his life?
You know, I think in 1963, coming off of Birmingham and leading into the March on Washington, there's this sense, at least in the North, maybe a more reluctant sense in the South, that change was really going to happen and that America was turning a corner. There was a feeling that we really might be able to put some of this anger and violence behind us. And the March on Washington really represented that for so many people, literally Black and white people together harmonizing and singing along and hearing these inspirational words. JFK, who was opposed to the march, is now ready to really help push for meaningful civil rights legislation. There's a feeling that this could be it, and that King is really poised to lead, to unite. And part of it, the reason he has this power is that he speaks, his voice really carries across racial dividing lines, even somewhat between North and South. Unfortunately, it doesn't last. You know, there's a backlash to this success. We see it, you know, just days after the March on Washington, when the bombing of the church in Birmingham.
Jonathan Eig is the author of King, A Life. The biography is out today. Jonathan, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.